Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Chris Buccanani. Chris, a lot happier weekend in Happy Valley this week than last week.
Indeed, Jim, as we kind of expected, looking at the schedule, it was very possible we were going to have a down in the dumps weekend when Ohio State came to town. And so for me, the opportunity to re-rack with a whiteout game under the lights, have a nice full day of tailgating with, by the way, absolutely unbelievable, beautiful October fall weather in the first full week in November, and put Penn State on track to go to the playoffs and host a game in the first round was exactly what the doctor ordered. So this worked out perfectly from my perspective.
It really did, Chris. And it caused me to pause a little bit here and take a look at the circumstances. I had an outstanding weekend. Outstanding. In fact, I want to talk about it more, but let me start with this. Are we not really, really fortunate to have an event like the whiteout? And we get it every year. Nobody else has it. It's ours. And we get to enjoy. It's like a holiday every year, the whiteout, and we get to experience it.
I got a really unique perspective on the whiteout this weekend, Jim, because my friend and co-host on the obligatory pregame show, Brandon Noble, who was a defensive tackle for the Nittany Lions back in the 90s, coached in the European Football League this past year. And he brought two of his assistant coaches who were on staff with him to Happy Valley this past weekend. One was a UW grad who played for the Huskies when he was in college. And the other, just a young guy, I think early 20s, who was from Germany. And so I got to talk to him, and I think we're going to bring him on the show this week just to get his perspective about what it was like coming over from Hamburg and visiting Happy Valley and getting to attend the whiteout and just seeing the whole spectacle of the tailgating all day. And he was just mesmerized by the fact that he could watch football on a television mounted to the side of an RV in the middle of the afternoon. And then to get into the stadium and see the whiteout, it was really cool to kind of get the perspective on it through his eyes. And it really does help you appreciate what we've got. We should never take it for granted.
That's really the case. Well, let me give you my story, a little bit similar. At our tailgate was a young guy who he's engaged and he's a Penn Stater living in Boston. So now has all the friends up there. And he has said he's always wanted to get his friends to Penn State for a game. So they turned this into, it was his bachelor party. Dozen friends from Boston or the area. And he, of course, as a Penn Stater, has gone through this, but he wanted his friends to experience it. Mm-hmm. So they were all in and they were at our tailgate. These guys, they were just, and I'll throw in this, we had our tailgate at the Revel XP lot. You folks have heard me talk about it before. It's just a great environment. The place was just packed, and every tailgate tent was packed. They were just loving the whole thing, the whole event. And this is before they even walked into the stadium, you know, to experience what's inside there. It was already this spectacular day, and the game hadn't even started yet. And I thought of that, too. That I had just a fantastic time. And we hadn't even seen any football yet, Chris.
Yeah, one thing on which I think many of us probably lose perspective, and you can't be blamed for it really, is just a lack of awareness around how unique the tailgating space available at Penn State is, even versus a lot of the other iconic college football venues, just sort of as a function of how and when Beaver Stadium got moved to that side of campus. Accessibility to all those fields, open fields all around the stadium, makes it pretty unique. So I think that's one of the key ingredients in the tailgating scene we enjoy. So yeah, that's always impressive to people who aren't used to it.
And do you know the other part that always strikes me too as we tailgate? And I've been doing this for years and decades, Chris, is how neighborly everybody is at the tailgate. You end up talking to the people next to you, exchanging food and drinks and stories. And it's just, and I'm resisting using the word unique because other schools have tailgating and they do it very well. But it's just such a special entire weekend. And I do also want to share with you the rest of my weekend, Chris. Friday night, I came in to town on Friday. I attended the collective Happy Valley United had their whiteout party event Friday night.
Oh, right.
It was at the Nittany Lion Inn. And I think you mentioned this to me. It's been renovated. It was fantastic, the venue. Okay. You start with that. And I know a lot of Penn State folks have issues with anything having to do with NIL. And trust me, I get it. But if you're going to do it, if it's going to, you know, raising money for NIL, if you're going to do it right. They did it right on Friday night. It was a great crowd, great audience, tremendous enthusiasm. And I don't know if I've ever been to an event like this in a ballroom in this wonderful place like the Nittany Lion Inn with everybody wearing white, okay? But the enthusiasm there, they did some like hype video things. It was just tremendous. Some Letterman, Trace McSorley was there. So that's how I started the weekend. Then I spent the weekend at, again, another place that we often talk about, which is Go PSU RV, where, you know, you stay at the RVs for the weekend. So, like, after the game Saturday night, I did not drive all the way home. You know, that two-hour drive after midnight when you've had people partying all day, and I've always seen the cars swerving, which is always fun on the interstate, Chris. So I stayed there and it was just so much fun even there. They have the fires, you know, like the campfire after the game at midnight, get back there. And we were up for a while talking and having just fun there. Just a tremendous weekend. And I know maybe folks didn't tune in to hear about Jim's weekend. but Jim had a spectacular weekend, and it sounded like you did too, Chris, with many guests.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was a really good time, and the crowd, tailgating-wise, sort of filtered in over the course of the day. We, of course, were there when the lots opened, as any true fan should be. And although, look, if you don't want to get there at lot open, I'm actually fine with that because we don't want too much traffic at the beginning of the day, so that's fine. But by the time it got to game time, the fans showed up and they showed out. They created that unique atmosphere. I think it's exactly what the team needed to refocus on the journey ahead. And I think by the time we got to kickoff, everybody was really in the headspace of, hey, we're at number 6 in the country right now. We just watched number 4 and number 3 get upset. This is all laid out in front of us. We just got to do the thing 4 times. And we're going to be back here in the week before Christmas to host a playoff game. And I think it was just really exactly what you needed to be dialed in on what's ahead.
And you know what? You hit the key for me, which is that home playoff game. I know I'm a broken record, Chris. I want that home playoff game so badly. And you're right, with those couple losses, Miami going down, Georgia going down, it really puts Penn State in a great position. If Penn State wins out, I can't see any other way except for them to host a playoff game.
I thought when we debuted at number 6, which frankly was 3 or 4 spots higher than I was expecting to be in the initial playoff rankings, already we were in a great position that all we had to do was win. I didn't think it was about style points or scoreboard watching. But yeah, the upsets that happened this past weekend solidify our position even more.
And again, I cannot wait for that. So, all right, how about we talk a little bit about the game? Well, first of all, let me ask you, Chris. It's a new week. Are you willing to actually talk about the game this week?
For sure.
Okay. If for those who didn't listen for last week, first of all, why not? This should be on your go-to show to listen to. the second, Chris just really didn't want to talk about it last week. So this week we're going to talk about the game. Chris, first half of the game, Penn State halftime, it's 28-0, 7-for-7 on third down. They pitched a shutout in the first half. I think it was a touchdown for every possession, 4 possessions, 4 touchdowns. Best half of this season?
Off the top of my head, I'm going to have to say yes, definitely considering the circumstances and the fact that we would like to see this team maybe even out and shake that second half team vibe. So, yeah, great half.
Yes, some of the numbers in the first half, and where did I have my first half statistics? 16 first downs to 6, Chris. Passing yards, 140 to 59. And perhaps my favorite, rushing yards. Penn State, 22 carries for 124 yards. Washington, 13 carries for, care to guess?
Oh, boy. I'm going to say, now, is this subtracting the sack yardage?
Yes, yes, net yards.
Yeah, I'm going to say 7 yards.
You were oh so close. 13 rushes for 12 yards.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Chris, correct me if I'm wrong. I, you know, don't profess to be an experienced football player and all, but it's pretty good when the opposition has more carries than yards, is it not?
That's very good. Yes. So for as confused as the defense always appears to be right before the ball is snapped, as they're lining up, whatever they're doing a pretty good job.
Yes. And I'll tell you what, if they could just dodge some of those penalties, Chris, it would be, would have been a perfect half.
Indeed. But we probably don't have enough time to get into this segment, Jim, to talk about the officiating, but there were some questionable calls both ways, in both directions.
I am going to give you the opportunity to talk about that, Chris. It's interesting. Yes, I want to talk about officiating, and literally right before we came on the air, I was just doing some reading, some catching up online, and I've got to tell you this. I just feel so bad about this. Pitt lost again, and apparently there were a couple controversial calls at the end of the game that went against Pitt.
That's a real shame.
Yeah, that was my feeling too. And Pat Narduzzi was very upset about it, and I'm just heartbroken for him. We'll talk more officiating when we get back. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and Cafe Tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number 2. He's Chris. I'm Jim. We are talking about Penn State's big whiteout victory over Washington on Saturday. Chris, an absolute great time. You mentioned the weather was spectacular. I mean, that was that not perfect football weather? Just kind of crisp but clear, not too cold. Just that is football weather, perfect football weather.
Yeah, it's like I said, it felt like it was the middle of October. Clear day, crisp, and not too windy. That was a big factor I was concerned about, especially with the game kicking off at 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
You know, the low temperatures aren't too bad if you don't have that wind cutting through you. And so fortunately we were able to avoid that.
Yeah. And by the way, Friday was a bit windy, so it was vastly improved come Saturday.
Yes. All right.
At the end of the first quarter, Chris, I committed to you that we would talk a bit about the officiating. Some interesting calls. I'm going to let you have the floor.
Well, the first call I want to talk about, Jim, the one that I think was most impactful for Penn State and just most frustrating to me was the holding call on Nick Singleton's kickoff return for a touchdown. I thought that was just a bad call. And I'm not somebody who really likes to spend a lot of time complaining about officiating, but I just don't see how you throw that flag. And to take that play away from him, I just thought was egregious, like just foolishness, and I hate to see it. And I also think it took the wind out of Penn State's sails. I think they entered the second half knowing that they could go through the motions a little bit, and there was just no way Washington was coming back in that game. And at one point, I thought there was maybe a route incoming when he scored that touchdown. And then when they took it off the board, I think psychologically the team just sort of shut it down for the night. So that was the most frustrating call to me. But we'll get to the second most frustrating in a moment. Well,
I'm with you. I think that took a lot of wind out of their sails. I think the crowd base, the crowd was ready to just explode with it. And I'm also with you on, and again, the call went against Penn State, and it's costly when you bring back a kickoff return for a touchdown. But the other part, to my take on officiating, especially in football, is – unless a call is blatant and affects the play, don't call it. I mean, that's the thing.
Even if you had to call, even if it was holding, it was my point. I think it's arguable that it was even worthy of being identified as holding. It always bothers me when you call that away from the play.
Yeah. And if you do, now there are certain times when a call like that is just so egregious that you have to call it. Okay. If there's any gray to it at all, and it's away from the play, just stop. Just stop being a part of the game as officials.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like the, and I'll be sympathetic to James Franklin in talking about the call last week against Ohio State. I guess it was Elliot Washington stepping over the player. By the rule book, technically that's a penalty, but you see that happen a lot and not called.
Yeah.
So why all of a sudden in a case that was not egregious, it wasn't like the guy's laying on the ground. I know I'm relitigating last week, but I'll give you another opportunity to relitigate last week. And I don't know if this is where you were headed or not. I'm not sure how I feel about this, but a week ago, there's a play, Ohio State receiver catches, call on the field, I guess, was fumble. They overrule it, say it was an incompletion. This week, very similar play with Tyler Warren. Is it a catch and fumble, or is it an incompletion? And the fact that it was 1 week apart, it was Penn State involved in the game in both of them, and both times it went against Penn State, makes it stick in everybody's craw. What did you see on those two plays?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you said it word for word, Jim. That's right. That was the same play in back-to-back weeks. I mean, the exact same play, the mirror image. And the call went against Penn State both times, and it was interpreted entirely differently both times. Now, I do think one caveat could be, you said that the play was ruled a fumble in the Ohio State game. I'm not sure that it was. I think they may have actually ruled it an incompletion.
Okay. You could be, you're right. I think you are right, Chris.
The issue with that is that, you know, this standard, which itself is not consistently adhered to, is indisputable visual evidence to overturn the call on the field. And so in the case of the Ohio State game, I believe it was ruled an incompletion, and I believe it was ruled a fumble by Tyler Warren against Washington. So you can say, well, if they considered both to be inconclusive, then they just upheld the call on the field. It's just one of those things where you would like to see the ambiguity stripped out of how these games are officiated, and to have it happen in back-to-back weeks with the exact same circumstances and have it be called in polar opposite ways, both of them negatively impacting Penn State, is just very frustrating. And I will say early in the first quarter, there was a targeting call that got a Washington player ejected from the game that I thought was ludicrous. Even the fans in my section, we all looked around. There were a couple of Washington fans down the row from us, and I looked at the guy and I said, "That's a stupid call." And I did say to someone else, though, it's nice after almost 28 years to get a member in good standing call from a Big Ten officiating crew when we got a new team coming into the conference. But of course, then I spoke too soon because we got a bunch of crap calls go against us later in the game. And as always, Jim, don't attribute to malice what can better be explained by incompetence.
Well, a couple thoughts, though, on that, Chris. And I believe I told the story on the air that last week's game in the press box, there were several NFL scouts. And when the play occurred with the pass either being an incompletion or a fumble in Penn State recovery, the scouts I was with were watching the replay and go, "Oh, I think it was a completion and fumble watching the replay." Second one agrees with them. Yeah. They're looking for my opinion. And I'm like, "You guys just haven't seen many Ohio State, Penn State games. If there's a call that could go either way, they don't go either way. Go Ohio State's way." And of course, that one did. So here, for it to be so egregious week after week, it leads me to ask about, and I realize that these officials are full-time something else, okay, is their profession.
Yep.
But you would think the Big Ten Conference, when they have plays like this, someone would cut up these plays and review them and distribute that to the officials with, "Hey, look, this is the kind of play that's happening. Here's how we choose to, here's how we should be ruling these." And if it's even for the replay officials, but it just seems painfully obvious that week to week they're inconsistent with the call. And one last note, you mentioned the idea of how it was called on the field. I think the one exception to how it's called on the field is the standard when, is it a fumble or not? And sometimes the officials will swallow their whistle to let it play out.
Right.
So it's like, okay, if it is a fumble, which team recovered it? So we let it go. That, I think, should be judged a little bit different than, "Oh, it was called this way on the field. We can't overrule it. Not enough evidence." You know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%. That's the whole reason why you're allowing the play to go on, which I'm in favor of, by the way, because you know you can take advantage of all the tools at your disposal to get the call right, which is the whole objective, right?
Exactly. And it's the inconsistency. And if you're, if you're a Penn State fan watching it, you're like, "Hey, I've seen this play recently, haven't I? I know which way it should go."
And I'll just say this in terms of what can we do to clean up this problem. First of all, some of the things you're describing about cut-ups and areas of focus and everything, that does go on. I think there's far too much opacity to the process. We don't get a lot of visibility into how that works. There's not a lot of accountability. There's not a lot of transparency. So I would like to have more of that. And you mentioned that these guys are all full-time something else. Well, how about they be full-time officials? I think that needs to start at the professional level and then eventually trickle down to the big-time conferences as well. But I am all for paying these guys more, getting them more resources, allowing them to focus on doing this job and doing it as well as it possibly can be done, because it's a very difficult job. It's very hard. I don't take anything away from the tough task football officials in the NFL and big-time college football are charged with. Not at all. But I think that should be their job. I think you should compensate them however you need to. And then I think they should be accountable, just like everyone else in the entire food chain of the sport.
Exactly, Chris. Exactly. It's a billion-dollar industry. You could afford to pay these guys full time. And, going back to the film study and the cut-ups, I think the other thing, a point of emphasis, and this is just me, and call me crazy, Chris, if you want to, but if the ball carrier is tackled at the 21, the ball should not be marked at the 19. I'm just saying.
Yeah, that would be good.
So, okay, let's finish. Let's wrap up the officiating conversation. What other calls did you see that that bothered you?
I think those were the three that really stuck out to me. Just heartbreaking to see that play for Nick taken off the board. That was just so incredibly frustrating, especially given the way his night ended with a possible injury. And then, you know, the play you would have loved to see consistently called between incompletion last week and a fumble this week, both of them hurting Penn State, and then just the targeting call, I thought, was weak. You know, your neck and head are attached to your upper body. There's not too much you can do about it.
Well, the one last thing that I noticed in this game, and it's happening more and more, is the idea when one team can substitute, when the offense substitutes, you got to give the defense time to substitute.
Yeah.
And these guys now are so slow in jogging off the field, and it runs the play clock down, and you have the offense with literally just a couple seconds left to make their play. I think they have to address that one also.
I expect that is going to get some attention in the offseason for precisely the reasons you just listed.
Yep, they obviously have to do something about it. All right, Chris, that's it for quarter number two. When we get back, we will move on from officiating and talk more about the game itself. Stay tuned for that. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hall Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Chris Buccanani. It's quarter number three of our show. We're going to talk about the players, not the officials, this segment. Well, actually, before we talk players, Chris, I got one more, and this is not an officiating question. And this is not me second guessing, because I called this when it was happening. End of the first half, Washington is down 21-0. They get their last, they get the ball with a little over 3 minutes left to go. They get the ball where it ends up, it's fourth and two as the 2 minute warning is approaching. They lined up as if they were going to go for it. There was a play review, but it ended up, you know, they weren't going to run the play. They were going to let it go to the 2 minute timeout and then punt. And I said at the time, I thought they should go for it. They're down 21-0 already. They have to kick off to Penn State to start the second half. And they're in a process of punting the ball away, giving it to Penn State with another chance to score before the half. I'm like, this game is getting away from you. One more score by Penn State and it's over. You need to try to score on this possession. I thought, you go for it here. Now, what I'll add to it is, they ended up punting. Nobody questions the coach at all. Not at all. Had he gone, and Penn State marched right down the field and scored, and essentially the game was over. Yeah. But nobody's questioning the coach on that call. Had he gone for it and missed, he would have been crucified for it. But that doesn't take away to me, personally, he should have gone for it, Chris. I don't even think it was that close with the game circumstances the way they were at the time. What's your thoughts?
I think the last part of what you said is critical, the game circumstances, because I think I'm more sympathetic to your viewpoint than I would be just in sort of a generic football strategy standpoint. Right. But where Washington is as a team, who they are as a team, where they are in their season, the situation they were facing, what they'd seen already from Penn State and the environment they were playing in, I agree that it would be totally reasonable to say, hey, look, this is a short yardage situation. We feel good about the physicality of our run game as one of the strengths of our offense. So let's take a shot here. Now, the flip side to that is, it is only 21 points, and if you give Penn State a short field or a shorter field, and then they score again, you think you staked your entire chance to win the football game on one do-or-die play in the first half. But you'd probably seen enough and you probably knew enough going in to understand that 21 points was probably just as insurmountable a lead as 28.
But if you could have done something there as opposed to giving up that possession and knowing the next possession – start of the second half again was going to be Penn State's.
Correct. Yeah.
You know, exactly what you said. It's the circumstances as they were. And what was funny is I'm talking with some folks that I'm with, and it's not me second guessing. I said it at the time. They argued against me, and I said, watch, if Penn State marches right down the field and scores, I'm going to say, I told you so. And they did, by the way. So, and I did do the I told you so. But also, it leads me, though, to my next conversation, which will be actually the play of Penn State on the field. Chris, they had four possessions in that first half, Penn State did. Four touchdowns, okay? Not only that, the number of plays by possession was 9, 14, 8, and 9. They held the ball. They scored on each one, but I think what's even more telling is the time of possessions. The first three touchdowns were 4 minutes, 6.5 minutes, 4 minutes. But at the end of the half, when they have the clock ticking against them, they scored in 1.5 minutes. That's one of the things that I think tells me that, and this is not the first time they've done that at the end of the half, march down the field like in 1 minute, 1.5 minutes.
Yeah.
When they need to, they could do that. They can score quickly.
Yeah, and the fact, Jim, that let's just start with Drew Aller, that he has the confidence level and the competency executing that offense to be able to comfortably move the team down the field in those situations as consistently as he has so far this year. I think to me, that is one of the clearest indicators of his growth as a quarterback and something you really love to have down the stretch here, that you feel like when you get up against it, every time he gets one of those drives and pulls it all together, I think it probably only increases his resolve that he can get that done. As frustrating as that Ohio State game was 2 weeks ago now, we weren't that far off. And I still don't think this team has entirely put it all together for a full game. They got real close in this first half against Washington. And then, like I said, that kickoff return got called back. And I think they just sort of shut it down, knowing that they could already be, you know, treading water for two quarters and on to Purdue. I agree. The fact that Penn State was able to capitalize on that opportunity Washington handed them in that way is very encouraging for what lies ahead.
And just to put a bow on that performance in the first half, 7 for 7 on third down conversions, Chris.
Yeah, Penn State's been much better on third down than they've been the last several seasons.
And as you said, that the confidence level, and I know a lot of folks talk about it, and it was even – I was rewatched. I got as far as the rewatching the first half and hearing the commentators – they talked about talking to the coaches during the week. You know, we got to stretch out the defense. We got to throw it over the top. To be honest with you, what I look forward to is more of those mid-range passes to Trey Wallace, that 15 to 20-yard window. That just seems to be right up Drew Aller's alley. And by the way, he was 14 for 18 in the first half, Chris. That, if my math is correct, is somewhere around 77% completion. Well,
if you go back to Trace McSorley's performance in the Fiesta Bowl after the 2017 season, I think Washington fans are just going to believe that Penn State quarterbacks don't miss on third down. But both Drew and Trace McSorley just carved up the poor Huskies defense in third down opportunities. And yeah, I was encouraged is probably the right word by the play of the wide receivers and the way they got involved in the offense and the number of guys who got involved. There's still more work that needs to be done there. It's not suboptimal, certainly, to be a top five, top six team and to be in November saying, well, we still need to do some work to get our wide receivers involved in the offense. But
right,
you go to war with the army you have. And the fact that Trey Wallace made some plays and Julian Fleming finally got on the board with his first touchdown as a Nittany Lion, those are things that, you know, you're just looking for positive indicators. And the play of the receivers and how they got involved in the offense and what appears to be Drew Aller's confidence level with his pass catchers in contrast to where he was last year, those are all trending up based on the Washington game. So I think that's good as well. It's tough with the remainder of these regular season opponents, Jim. Like, you're just not getting a great read on how much progress is being made because we just Penn State outmatches everyone left on their schedule.
Well, but there's a tendency, not just Penn State, but we've seen it with other teams throughout the country where teams are playing down to their competition. So I'm looking at it as what I want to see in this Penn State offense going forward, and yes, these games should all be mismatches, is just the efficiency of the offense. And here's the thing I mentioned to you, first half, four possessions, four touchdowns. If you go through how the second half went, they only had three possessions in the second half, and well, the fourth possession at the end of the game. But the only way they didn't score, Chris, was when they stopped themselves. There was first of all, the kickoff return called back. There was then the fumble, then the missed field goal. So in the second half, it wasn't their opponent stopping them. They were stopping themselves.
Yes. The missed field goal, by the way, does make me a tad uneasy because the college kickers are going to miss field goals. And that was a weird situation where it seemed like we almost iced our own kicker by taking a timeout there.
Yes.
But that should be a really makeable kick for Ryan Barker, who has been money in the bank since he took over the job as the starting place kicker. So yeah, that makes you a little nervous.
It does, but again, my point is though that Penn State didn't punt in this game. Okay, not one punt.
Right.
And which obviously is a good sign. You like that to be the case. You hope you're not giving the ball up by turning it over with interceptions and fumbles. But again, I think it's the nature of where penalties have stopped them and missed field goals have been an issue. Yes, it's been much better with Ryan Barker. But yeah, in this game, the tale of the two halves is the first half they didn't stop themselves. The second half they did multiple times.
Yeah, I think that's a good read on it, actually. I've not really heard that exact take, but I think you nailed it. And I got that's good and bad, right? It's good that we know that they're talented enough to take advantage of a defense in Washington that looked much better statistically on paper than they actually are on the field. But again, they go from being a second half team to a first half team in this game, and you make those little mistakes. You always like to have a few things to clean up on tape on Monday morning, and they definitely will.
Well, and this is not me saying, oh, it's okay, these are forgivable, but it really tells you how narrow the margin is between success and failure.
Yeah,
and sure. You know, you went through 4 for 4 on touchdowns or on four possessions to, you know, one touchdown in the second half, mostly because you made your own mistakes, whether it was the penalty on the kickoff return, questionable that it was, and then, you know, you give up possessions by having a fumble. Again, controversial call, but it still was. All right, Chris, when we come back for the fourth quarter, and I'm sure this is a topic for a lot of folks, I know it was in real time as it was going on. A week ago, getting inside the 10, getting a first down, and just zero success. And the questions were, why didn't they put Tyler Warren at quarterback? Or Bo Prabula? Why didn't they run wide? Why didn't they throw the ball before fourth down? Oh, I guess they discovered all of those this week. We'll talk about it when we come back.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's Chris. I'm Jim, talking about Penn State versus Washington. And Chris, at the end of the third quarter, I brought up how Penn State performed once they got the ball with inside the 10-yard line.
Yep.
They did a lot of the things that all the fans were asking about before. And my first quick take on it is they just get conservative when Ohio State's on the field. It's like they start playing not to lose. And that's my take of why they did it, what they did last week, and why they were so much more creative this week. Why do you think the difference?
Yeah, I think that's a fair read. I also think there's just an aspect of learning from mistakes, right? You can look at that and take it from the perspective of where was this against Ohio State? Or you can say, and I do agree that the tightening up versus that opponent was a big part of it, that you made choices against Ohio State that turned out to be less than ideal because you closed your playbook. You failed to involve your best and most dynamic playmakers. And so if that's the criticism, you know, the milk's already spilled on Ohio State. Well, you know, what more do you want Andy Kotelnicki to like prostrate himself before the fan base and profusely apologize for not putting Tyler Warren in? Listen, I'm sure he regrets that call as much as anyone. The only question is, can you improve now going forward? That's the only thing left under your control. And I think that there was an element of that. It was just, you know, Andy learning from mistakes and correcting them going forward.
I would appreciate the apology, Chris.
Yeah, I don't need an apology. I'd say, but James Franklin can apologize for ringing the victory bell after he lost the game.
Well, the thing for me is, you know,
I'm joking about that, by the way. Real quickly, James does not need to apologize. And I don't want to trivialize it because I do really appreciate, as we said on the show after he did it, when he came out in the Wisconsin press conference and apologized for the way he behaved earlier in that week and his media availability. I think that did warrant an apology, and I'm glad he did it. But I'm not going to be out here asking James to say I'm sorry every single time. I thought it was kind of – I thought it was a little nutty that he caught some boos in the pregame introduction from the fans. I don't think it's a big deal. The fans are emotional. Like, you got a lot of Philly fans in the audience, and that's how we show love. Philly fans show love with tough love, okay? You know?
Well, the thing that has to be remembered with all of that, and I want to ask you about that, the booing of James Franklin before the game, but I'll say my take on it is the same as it was last week when – I was told when James Franklin responded to the fan was out of line. You know what? He was. The fan was out of line. But, Chris, there's 110,000 people there. If 1%, just 1% of them get out of line, that's over 1,000 fans getting out of line, okay? Yeah. And I don't think that the booing was, you know, like the majority of the fans. It wasn't. So I think James Franklin has to be smart enough to realize it. So when an individual fan gets in his face and does what happened last week, just let it go. You have nothing to gain by responding to it. So just he's got to be the guy smart enough, you know, to let it go. But anyway, Chris, in the game itself, what we didn't talk about yet was the performance of the defense.
Yeah. I was hoping we would get there.
It gets overlooked, but that was a wonderful performance and not a bad Washington team. I know they're not great on the road, but they just shut them down.
Yeah, to the point about Washington as the quality of Washington as an opponent this year, I really give a ton of credit to Jed Fish, who I have liked as a coach and did a bang-up job at Arizona. I think he has done a really commendable job given the situation he walked into. They lost so much NFL-caliber talent off that team that played in the national championship team last year to the pros or to graduation. And then for the roster to get further picked clean through the transfer portal when they lose their coach, he went into a really challenging situation when he took that job. And the thing that I've been impressed with is that he's put a competitive team on the field and they haven't quit on him. So credit to Jed Fish. That said, I mean, they are limited. And if you want to consider yourself a playoff caliber team, your defense has to be able to take advantage of opponents like that. And they did. I thought Abdul Carter had a great night as a complete unit. I thought the defense played very well. And you can tell, man, Jalen Reed went into this season with a big chip on his shoulder, not being named All Big Ten last year. And I think he just wants to leave no doubt.
Oh, yeah. He had a big game. The interception led the team in tackles, along with, surprise, surprise, Kobe King, who I also thought played another good game.
Yeah, he had a great night.
Abdul Carter, it feels, Chris, like he's I don't want to use the word finally, but he's really found his stride at defensive end. And I'm not sure if I've seen a defensive end get held more often than him and have it not getting called.
It's crazy, some of the plays where he has not gotten the benefit of a holding call this season. And again, I don't want to make it sound like I'm whining about officiating. Oh, we never get any calls. We don't get any holding calls. But there are just some times where you see the guy's practically getting clotheslined from behind because he's just cleanly beaten the opposing offensive lineman. And there's just no flag. I don't understand it, because you think star players, who everyone knows and everybody knows to be on the watch for being subject to that kind of treatment, tend to get the flags more. And it's almost been like the opposite for Abdul this year.
Well, and I know this is going to sound like me being facetious, and I'm not. It's almost as if the officials feel sorry for the tackles. Hear me out. You have these huge masses of humanity playing tackle. And here you have this guy, Abdul Carter, and I don't know how he's outweighed by what, 60, 70 pounds often. And he's just so athletic when he goes wide, okay, with the speed, the bend. It's like I almost feel like subconsciously the official saying to himself, well, I'd try to hold him too.
There is maybe an element that they look at it and think to themselves, if I call holding on this play, I'm not to flag them for holding every snap for the rest of the game. So I'm just going to let it go.
Yeah. Yeah. There are games where the standards are set, you know, hey, this game's getting a little physical, but that's how we're calling it. But you're right, because those guys, they just seem, the offensive tackle seems helpless. And what else are you going to do? You're going to grab hold. But overall with the defense, again, Chris, 5 sacks, 9 tackles for loss that totaled 51 yards. That's a great performance by the defense.
It really was, especially when you consider Washington kind of threw him a curveball, bringing the reserve quarterback in, who has a little bit more mobility. And, you know, you see it often. Sometimes those guys come in, there's not a lot of tape on them. The defense doesn't know what to expect from them. They're all keyed up because they're in the game for the first time. They don't know what they don't know, so they just default to their natural ability. And when you have a quarterback who can extend plays and hurt you with his feet, then, you know, all of a sudden, he had a little bit more success moving the ball than, you know, famed American satirist Will Rogers did.
Well, you know, the thing is, Chris, they have used him similar to how Penn State has used Bo Prabula.
Right. Right.
So he has gotten some of that play time for the exact same reason. He's a threat to run the ball. Yeah, and it's pretty obvious he's the future at Washington. He's a freshman, and he's the guy that they're going to build around, I'm assuming.
It's certainly, you would think he's more in the mold of the kind of quarterback that Jed Fish wants to use. Now, Will Rogers had a fair amount of success early on in his career at Mississippi State, playing in the air raid offense under Mike Leach, and then was a little bit more of a square peg for what they tried to do after, the Mike Leach's tragic passing. So he got a new start there in Washington. And I think, again, going back to just the limitations on this team, they just don't have the horses this year. But as I'm looking at the new Pac-12 entrants and the pecking order, obviously right at the top is Oregon. But I think Washington is right there in position to be ahead of the other two Los Angeles teams.
I think going by Jed Fish's success at Arizona, and he will have the time at Washington to put together his team. But with all that said, by the way, UCLA is playing very well right now.
They're turning into a quality win for us, aren't they? Which is nice, because Illinois has kind of dropped the ball on that, and we were hoping that maybe Minnesota could end up being a quality opponent down the road here in a couple of weeks, and then they lost to Rutgers. So, again, we're very fortunate to be ranked where we are and have teams ahead of us losing, so we just have to survive in advance.
One last thing I wanted to ask you about, and that's, you know, the legend of Tyler Warren keeps growing. And again, I was just watching some of the replay, and I got through the first half. No station, no network can now cover Penn State without putting up the graphic of Tyler Warren has lined up X times at inline tight end, so many as wide receiver, so many as offensive linemen, so many in the backfield. They have to do it. But what I found interesting, and I noticed it happened last week also, it used to be early in the year, Tyler Warren would line up in the Wildcat, and you know, if you're paying attention, it's pretty obvious that he's going back there. Now, that can't happen without the crowd reacting to it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's become one of the bigger stars we've had for a while at Penn State, and it's fun. I am still waiting for him to get that touchdown reception that's going to put him alone atop the record books for receiving touchdowns for a tight end. He's currently tied with Mike Gesicki and Pat Freiermuth, and he keeps getting in the end zone, but not as a pass catcher.
Well, that's the problem with lining him doing so well out of the Wildcat. And just one last thing, and again, part of the legend, leaping in from 3 or 4 yards out and getting into the end zone with extending the ball over.
Yeah, great play, and very heads up to know where the plane of the goal line was and to make sure you broke it.
Yes, excellent performance by him. All right, Chris, that is it for our show. Thank you, Chris, and thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.